This is the other end of the story. This is looking at an application that is consuming a camera and the troubles we had with it. This, have I got this switched on? Maybe? Light's green. So the troubles we had interfacing to the APIs, and yeah, I have a sub-conclusion, which was that Plan 9 had the right idea. So I'm Tim Panton. I'm the CTO at pi.pe, GmbH, Pipe, and we license a WebRTC stack for small cameras, and some of them move, some of them don't, that's a baby monitor, but some of them move quite quickly. This is actually the subject of the talk. I don't know if you can see it up in the top corner there, but it's a camera that's mounted in a race car over the driver's shoulder so that the driver can be helped by the pit crew. So it's a real-time video from behind the driver's shoulder, looking out over the track, but also what the driver's doing, back to the pit crew. So we're interested in low latency, high quality video over 5 or 10 kilometers. I mean, so we're not talking thousands of miles, but a distance. And so we use 5G for that. But I'm not really going to talk about much of that, except that that's the context of it. Oh, and by the way, that's what it looks like. So I'm not really going to talk about a lot of that. What I'm interested in talking about is the bit between the camera and our software, how that interface hooks together. Just to give you the full picture, we have an ARM SBC sitting there running Linux with our software sitting there doing the WebRTC piece and some smart stuff about bandwidth management and various other security things and whatever else, monitoring some sensors and stuff like that. But it needs to get the key thing is it needs to get the camera data. And so this talk's kind of about how we did that and the history of how we've walked through that. So the first thing is like a lab prototype to see whether we could make this work at all. And what we did, which is what you do with any video project like this, is you start off with GStreamer. You put a GStreamer pipeline together and you kind of get something to vaguely work. And that's what we did. And so basically what we did is we took the V4L2 cam source and encoded it to H.264, packetized it to RTP, all in GStreamer, and then sent that to those RTP packets to localhost, which we then picked up in our WebRTC stack, did stuff, magic stuff with them, and then sent them out over the wire. And this actually worked. I mean, it's simple. Like, it's a really simple setup. And one of the nice things about it is that, like, the video bit is well isolated from our stuff in the WebRTC stack, and it worked really well in the lab. But the moment you get it out onto a real network with packet loss and variable bit rates and stuff like that, it failed miserably. And basically, what you want to be able to and in order to get anything, you had to keep sending keyframes, which reduces what you get in terms of the performance. So I want to say a little word about like isolation, what I mean about the separation. So there's like kind of essentially three sorts of isolation I'm talking about there. We're talking about process isolation. So is it running a separate process? Does my In fact, Java process, does it have to care about what's happening in the video, low-level video APIs? And it's really nice if they don't, because then the threading gets a lot easier and stuff like that. The second piece of isolation is about memory. Are they sharing memory? Is there a security risk between, like, sending data between these two things? Is it something I need to worry about? And then the third piece is license isolation. And this is actually, in our particular case, we have potentially have some proprietary algorithms sitting in the Java doing stuff that maybe the car manufacturers have told us about. And we can't leak that out into open source, although we want as much of the stack as possible to be open source. So we need to be able to understand what the license isolation is. And that's not always possible. So all of these things are really desirable, right? So next step is, okay, so let's generate full frames. Let's be able to control generating full frames and control the bit rate, so we can manage the bit rate of on the encoder. So we went off and found a nice open source project for the Raspberry Pi, which managed the camera and did all that. And it's another GStreamer node. So we did that. We wrapped it up in a pile of C so that we exposed those two pads up into a standard I/O, and then we had the Java exec that, and we got the ability to control that the bit rate and to force a generation of a full frame directly from Java, but keeping the isolation, which was lovely, and with a really simple API, a really elegant API, which is just basically ASCII. And so we still got good isolation. So the only downside is it's a GStreamer pipeline. Now, I love GStreamer, it's really useful, but it is a pipeline. So you end up with some latency due to the fact you've got a bunch of frames in the different processes in the queue, in the different stages of the pipeline. And the other downside of this design is that every packet has to loop up and down through localhost, through the kernel. And that's unnecessary and costly. So we wanted to get the latency down, because these cars move pretty quickly, so it kind of matters. So we went for what turns out, in my view, to be absolutely the pinnacle of what we've done with this, which is to read H.264 frames direct from dev video, right? So you can, with some trickery on a particular version of Raspberry, and you can ask it to generate H.264 from dev video. And you get, when you read a block, do a read from it, you get an entire frame from it, and you can just packetize that and send it out. So we did that, and you get very nice low latency. You've got direct v4l2 access to changing the bit rate and forcing full frames. So this turned out to be a really easy way to do this. And nicely low latency and good isolation, because like the definition is like, it's file system access basically. It's file system and exec. So we're not like, we've got a really nice thing. However, it only works with the Broadcom blob, because that tight integration between the encoder and the camera is in the Broadcom blob and it's nowhere else. And then the Raspberry Pi folks deprecated it in the next release. So that was out, which is a sad thing. So now we get to the, like, okay, so we can't really use the Raspberry Pi because they've got rid of the hardware encoder in the 5. They don't, and there's various reasons it becomes unpractical. So we ended up moving to, sadly not a rock chip, as it turns out, it's AM Logic. And this hardware, this Cadres FIM 4, nice hardware, great. The only problem is that the supported GStreamer camera interface encoder interface doesn't support forcing full frames and doesn't support changing the bit rate. And I could not find the source code that would compile for that AML encoder module that would work with the camera. So like I spent a week looking for it, and I just couldn't find anything that compiled. But what I did find was the .so that it loaded to talk to the encoder. So I found the source code to that and did what was either an elegant or ugly, depending on your taste, hack on that, which just shares a 2-byte memory segment between that and the Java. And so you write into that what bit rate you want and whether you want a full frame. And for every encoded frame, it looks at that and says, oh, okay, so I need a full frame, and generates it and changes the bit rate as necessary. That turned out, and what's nice about that is you can say, I mean, it's ugly in some respects, but it's nice in that you can say to the, you can mark this shared memory segment as effectively read-only in the encoder software, and you can have it write-only in Java. So there's a, like, you know which direction the data's traveling. So although you're sharing memory and you're losing isolation from that point of view, it's still sort of controllable from that point of view, which is nice. And we're back at the higher latency because we've got a pipeline. And it, you know, in some senses it's ugly. So This is what we're doing at the moment, which is the next step, which is to say the thing I'd been avoiding, trying to avoid doing for a long time, that we, I didn't want to talk direct to the APIs in Java. I wanted a nice clean interface. Turned out to be impossible to do that, or it turned out I've avoided doing JNI, which is just a really ugly API for that. But the Java people have produced a much cleaner API for accessing .SOs that I started to use called FFM, and I'm not going to talk anything about it except that it gives you at least some sort of control over the memory access and allocation, and you can invoke invoke methods on the DLL. So we basically access both the encoder and vforl2. The downside with the vforl2 is we couldn't just read from dev video. We had to use the ioctls for doing the memory mapping, mmapped segments, but that's turned out to be manageable in the FFM, so that was okay. And we ended up with really nice latency. We're down to 170 milliseconds glass to glass, which I was quite pleased with. And that's with a private 5G between them. It's in pure Java, so I don't have to maintain any C, which is really nice. And I don't have to change what's shipped in the by the CADA stuff guys into the operating system. I don't have to mod an S.SO, which I'm much happier with. Downside is the isolation is obviously a little bit limited. And there's more code. I've got some code to maintain. However, terrible thing happened, and they have now updated the hardware so that it doesn't support that interface anymore. The vforl2 the video has gone, and it's now dev media, and it has a completely different API, which basically vforl2 kind of pretty much doesn't do anything that you expect it to, but there is a .so which is compiled in C++, so I have to mangle a bunch of names in order to try and even access these methods. But it and I have to, because it's a C++ API, I have to mangle and I have to do LD preload in order to get this thing to work. But it does actually work. I guess it's because it's Android compatible or something. I don't know why this change has happened, but it's kind of fairly unsatisfactory from my personal point of view. And I'm working with CADAS to try and make the vforl2 stuff at least work so that I can control the brightness and the hue and region of interest and all of those things. So I kind of want to say the summary of this is that Plan 9 was right. Like the file system interface, the cleanness, the simplicity of a file system interface makes people who are trying to use write applications that aren't in C++, then their lives massively easier. If you're trying to use a memory safe development environment, then a C++ .SO is the wrong answer. Like it just is unsatisfactory in every respect. And it would be really nice to get back to the kind of Plan 9, everything is a file aspect. There's a talk 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, if anyone's awake, on the basics of Plan 9. I recommend you go to it. It's a real eye-opener, how they think about things and how much you can get done with a really simple, clean interface. And I'd love us to get back at least close to that. Now, I want to say, like, open source is great. Like, I've been grumbling, but, like, the open source, I remember long ago when it was cheaper to write a whole new TCP/IP stack than to license one from Intel. Like, so we've come an awful long way since then, and I appreciate the fact that any of this was possible at all, but it would be nice if we got back to something that was simpler for the developers to use. So that's kind of the point, and come and talk to me afterwards, ask questions, but shout, because I'm a bit deaf. Like, there's a bunch of open source we do consulting on, and some of which we've written and some of which we haven't. yeah, you can contact me on any of those or just find me. I'll be around today. So yeah, thank you. Anyone got a question?
I've got to talk to you a lot more later, but the one thing I'm really curious about, I see you really like read from B4L2.
Yeah.
Instead of memory mapping the buffers. For your use case, I would expect you want to memory map the buffers because then there's no cost.
So we do. So why do I want to read rather than memory map?
Yeah.
The reason we want to read rather than memory map is that it's just simpler, right? It's a simpler, until we got to the FFM interface in Java, memory mapping was like, I had to write a bunch of C that would then I'd have to link in to the Java in order to do the memory mapping. Whereas with FFM, I'm allowed to do that without having to write any C. So it's essentially about not having to write C code.
At the cost of more memory copies.
Yeah. Right. At the cost of, but I mean, the latencies, if I'm down below a couple of hundred milliseconds, I'm happy. Any other questions?
Have you explored the support that you have in mainline maybe for orders on AIM logic chip? Because it seems like you are stuck with a pretty shitty library from the vendor which doesn't support.
So, I mean, this is kind of why I'm here today, to have that conversation. Why am I not using mainline? I should be looking at it. It didn't appear to be possible. So I don't know whether it is or it isn't. Yeah, we'll find out. Anyone else? No? Good. Thank you.